It's not going to be a problem. How it works, see? All right. Any suggestions? Any suggestions? All right. Let me start you off with an approach, okay? We say that the soul is that part of man that thinks, right? Part of mind that comprehends. All right? And we mention also that comprehension, understanding does not deal with physical objects. That's the way it is. Understanding, it's an amazing thing, but understanding does not in any way deal with physical objects. As a matter of fact, when Einstein came with his theory, so his theory is so abstract that people said, you know, he's not dealing with realities anymore. You know what I mean? So he said, he wrote in one of his books, I think it's The Meaning of Relativity, he said, it's not any more abstract than a person who is a geometer and talks about a line that he could never define. Because the points on a line, no one ever saw points on a line. You know, what is a line? A line is made up of a series of points. What is a point? There's no thing. You're not going to find a little point and go around and find something in the ground, a little point. See? It's an idea of the mind. A line is an idea of the mind. So that everything that we analyze, the mind can't see a physical. If the mind wants to understand a triangle, the mind doesn't see a physical triangle, because the mind can't see a physical. You could feel and touch, your senses can deal with a physical triangle. But the mind's eye doesn't deal with a physical triangle, it deals with a certain abstract essence, which is a line coming a certain way. You see angles, certain things. Now that essence that the mind deals with, you follow? Is not to be found in reality. It's not to be found in reality. You will not find such a thing. You will not find the circle that the mind deals with in reality. So it comes out that the mind is dealing in a different world than that which exists in reality. Isn't that true? Right? Because the mind's lines don't exist in reality. The mind's circles don't exist in reality. They're ideas, right? So these things that don't exist in reality, the mind deals with, right? It's dealing in a different world. Yet we see that there is some relationship between the world of the mind and the world outside. Right? The proof is that you have a television, you have a car, you have different things. Now those things are physical things. So the mind, somehow or other, while it deals in another world, nevertheless, that world is related in some way to the physical world. Right?
Isn't your understanding through the physical?
One second. We'll get to that. I'm just dealing with the two worlds, right? So you see that there are two worlds here. There's the world of the mind and there's the world of the physical. And these two worlds, while they are definitely not the same, no one can say they're the same, but nevertheless, somehow or other, like number. Number really doesn't exist. Did anybody ever see a number? Feel a number? Touch a number? Hear a number? You can't, right? There is no way that your senses can perceive number. It's purely something of the mind.
Idea.
Correct? It's purely an idea. And now where we got that idea from, we don't know. But there's an idea of number, and not only is there an idea of number, but numbers work so well in reality that everything that we do, I mean, the most advanced spacecraft is all based on numbers. It's impossible to have anything not based on numbers, right? So we see that while there are two worlds, there's the world of the mind, there's the physical world, somehow or other there is an interrelation between the two. Right? Because one affects the other in some way, right? Okay. Now there is then a connection somehow between the physical world and the world of the mind. Isn't that true? Okay? All right. Right? Okay. Yes.
The world of the mind. Let's say, what if there was nothing physical, right?
Right.
Let's just say that, I mean, how can your mind perceive something if there wasn't a physical?
Okay, hold on, just a second. Okay. Now, but that is true. What you're mentioning is true. Everything that we perceive, the world of the mind that we experience, is always a result of the world of the physical. Right?
It's like
it's needed. Correct. All right. Now, we say like this. In other words, what we're saying is, now you could say, of course, that it's always needed. You see? That this is the world of the mind is always requires a world of the physical, right? Yadis maintains it's not that the world of the mind always requires a physical, but it's just that in this existence of ours, the world of the mind cannot function without the world of the physical.
that's right.
You understand?
Yeah.
But that in reality, in other words, it's a certain condition which prevents it from functioning without the world of the physical. However, this condition does not always have to exist. You see? You could say two ways. You could say that the world of the mind we see cannot function without the world of the physical, right? Or you could say, no, the world of the mind really would be able, has a potential to function without the world of the physical. But the way we are in this existence, the condition of this existence is that it can't. There's something that precludes the possibility of the world of the mind functioning without the world of the physical. That's what Yavis maintains. You see? Judaism maintains that it's not that inherently the world of the mind can't work without the world of the physical, but it's just that in this physical existence...
It's like a vehicle to the world. It's the physical world.
The physical world, the physical mind, the physical world, rather, physical world, or physical mind also, the brain, in other words, is something which needs... in order, which the soul needs in order to function. Do you know what I mean?
So the mind inherently doesn't need the physical.
What?
The mind inherently doesn't need
the world of mind inherently doesn't. Right. There is another world of mind. You see? There's another world of mind.
In other words, the
nefesh,
what?
Just a memory
of the soul.
What's that?
The soul is the field of knowledge.
Right.
So it absorbs it through the physical, through the doors of the eyes.
That's right. Those are the doors to the soul, right.
Okay, so that means it doesn't make a person make decisions. It's just there. It's just the part of the person that makes decisions. And it's the part of the person that collects knowledge and holds it, which is the soul. So the soul has no influence on a person. It's just his own right or wrong.
In other words, the soul is using the body as a vehicle.
That's right.
Okay, now, the soul
is using the body as a vehicle, correct. Right.
Just to collect information. It's like a memory bank.
Well, more than a memory bank, because all of our ideas...
I'll
give you an example. You take a look at the two things, right? Like, let's say, for instance, well, not the two things equal. But let's say you take a look at two keys, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which are more or less the same, right? So say I look at these two keys, and I think to myself, well, they're both equal. You see? Now, what is equal? What is equal? Where did equal come from? Did you ever see an equal? You know, so equal?
Is
it's my perception. See, that's an idea of the mind. So that the physical world, while the physical world is not mind, but the physical world is something which reflects or makes your mind think of ideas. So the physical world is a stimulus. You see, in some way, it mirrors ideas. You know what I mean? It mirrors ideas. For that reason, we say like this. We say that the truth of the matter is that's why the philosophers look down upon the physical world. Because they say the actual physical world mirrors ideas, and it's the ideas that really guide the physical world. You have an idea, you work out an idea of how to do things, how to make a rocket. So then you put those ideas together, the rocket emerges,
so
right?
So it's not your soul that's making the ideas together, it's just collecting the ideas. And then what part of you is putting the ideas together?
That's a separate question of which parts. We'll get into that in a minute. But the point is that you see that now what we're saying is that insofar as our physical self is concerned, there is a certain relationship between the physical body, which absorbs these physical objects, and then the mind, the world of the mind, takes these objects and converts them to ideas. You see?
How does that work?
Well, we don't know. We don't know exactly how that works. See? Now, after death, what happens is that after death, we say that the physical condition ceases, so that the world of mind still continues.
That's a proof.
Without the limitation of the physical.
That's a proof that the mind doesn't need a physical world in order to have...
Not a proof.
No. Only in the physical body is around.
Right.
The physical body...
We're not proving it. We aren't proving it. That's not a proof. I'm not giving you a proof. I'm just showing you how. I'm just telling you what the results are. What this maintains is. You know what I mean? I'm not giving you a proof. Proof is a different type of thing. Just trying to show you what it is.
It's when it dies and the soul just goes on. And there's the detachment. That's the whole question.
That's right. In other words, the soul, you see, I'll give you one question. One of your Rishonim actually asked this question. He asked the question. They say, how could you possibly say that the soul has no place? But the soul of a person is in his body. So it's relegated to space.
It's not physical.
It's not physical, so how could it be in his body?
And how can another person have the soul of somebody else?
Right.
How
can what?
How can you say one person has one soul, like Joel has one soul, you'll have a different soul? So you're making it physical by saying it's different.
Very good. Very sharp. How do you know that?
How
do you know that, yeah?
You're showing place, you're showing quality.
Right.
And you're showing quantity.
Okay. Very good, very good, very good. That's still a question answer. Still a question answer. Okay. Now, the thing is like this. That the answer is, the answer to, not your question, but the answer to the question that was asked is how could it possibly be that the soul is, how could it possibly be that the soul is in a certain body? It means the soul has position, has place, right? And the answer is the soul is not in a body. The soul functions via the body. But you can't isolate the space and say it's over here, it's over there, it's over here, it's over here. That's ridiculous.
Like using the body.
So there's no soul inside of you. The soul just is related to the body functionally. That's all. But you can't say space because it's not a spatial entity. See? Okay. That's an abstract idea. But anyways, at any rate, that's what Yadus maintains. Yadus maintains that it's not the way we see only. In other words, we see the mind working with the body. The average person would say, look, okay, so you see the soul can't operate without the body. No, we say the soul could operate. It has a potential to operate without the body. But the only thing is that the body, its connection to the body prevents it from functioning without it. You see? Now, the thing is, that's what the Pasuk says. When Moshe Rabbeinu wants to know God, so God says, Ki lo yirani ha'odom v'choy. Man cannot see me as long as he's alive. Why? Because as long as he's alive, his mind operates via the vehicle of body. See? And since it operates via the vehicle of body, so it's always attached to the physical in some way. Even no matter how abstract the man can be, the most abstract guy in the world is still only a certain amount of steps away from the physical. You see? But after death, then the limitation of the physical is gone. Once the limitation of the physical is gone, then the mind can really soar and really be in the true world of ideas without limitations. You see?
There's no way for it to absorb knowledge.
What's that?
There's no physical way for it to absorb knowledge. So how does it absorb knowledge without the physical?
That's a good question. The question is how can the mind continue to absorb knowledge after death? Right. That's it. Look, there's a lot of questions. The problem with philosophy is that people don't take one question at a time. What's the next question I want to take?
When we have the soul, then. So the detachment is.
That's why somebody might ask you also before we go over that. Somebody might say that if you say there's a soul, so how come if you hit a guy over the head he can't think? Why can't the soul work? You see? Why can't the soul work? So Aristotle answered that many years ago. He says that if you look at the eye, he says the eye really takes an image and puts it, implants it in the brain. The brain really is what where the image registers, right? Now if a person is old, when he gets old, his eye might get weaker, right? So when his eye gets weaker, so what happens is the image that's implanted on the brain is not as clear anymore, right?
Same thing.
But if you would take a new eye from a young fellow and put it in and transplant it into this old guy's head, right? Then his image on the brain would be the same. So it's only the fact that the image on the brain isn't distorted in the old man. It's the eye that's distorted, right? So the eye is a vehicle through which the image registers on the brain, right? So the same thing with the mind. The mind is a vehicle through which things register on the soul. Now if you hit a guy over the head, what you're doing is like you're knocking out the guy's eye. You're not knocking out where it registers. Same thing with you hit a guy over the head. You're knocking out the medium through which the soul could see it. But you're not knocking out the soul.
Right.
See? You got it?
I get that, but how do I apply it now to the soul departing, the break in time?
Okay, now what do you want to know about the soul departing?
When the soul leaves the good.
Right.
Then there was one question I want to ask, but the one is, where's the time? And there's a time between the goof and the soul.
I mean, where's the break?
Yeah, it breaks somewhere.
In other words, when the goof's dead, the soul continues on. How does that break occur?
How does it occur?
Death has to do something with the brain stop functioning. It just it limits it now because it can't learn anymore because you've already put in as much learning as you can, or it takes away that limit so it could do better. I don't know. I have no idea. I never did.
But most of it happened. So I was half about a minute. I was pretty close. That's close to another year. I had stuff about 1 minute, but I didn't really see anything. So anyways, my soul didn't really soar. Yes.
I mean, what's the thing that you don't have? He's asking why you don't have the tool anymore. What are you?
No, what are you asking more specifically?
I was asking, where's the break? Where is the break between?
When the guy dies.
The guy dies. Okay, but where's the break?
How does the break?
There's an attachment. Where's the link? And how does the link break? I don't care. Not how it links. But what does the soul go from into?
What instrument does it use now?
No. Let me try not to define it.
Wait a second.
Yeah, it's hard to find what you're asking.
He's asking, when does the break take?
You want me to show you how the break works? I mean, what can I do for you?
Since there's no place for the soul, you said that the soul is not physical, right?
Right. Now, the moment the body dies...
So it's not physical. How can it break away from it? I mean, it's...
What do you mean? How can it be with it?
How can it be with it to begin with, anyway?
Right.
How can it break away with it?
Right, okay. That I told you. I said it's with it, not in a physical, not in a functional way. In a functional way. It's not with it in the sense of space.
It functions through that.
Yeah. It's a functional relationship. Okay. That the soul can't function unless it goes.
Can you give me an example so I can understand?
That's rough. Mm-hmm. Let me see if I can give you an example. As a matter of fact, on the way down here, I was trying to think of an example. Let me see, let's think of something which is an abstract functional relationship. Take some time. Let's say, for instance, like this. We say that the hand can't function without the brain, right? Which means there's a functional relationship between the hand and the brain, right? Now, this functional relationship is not just a spatial relationship. There's a spatial relationship between this box and the table, right? But it's not a functional relationship. There's no interaction. There's no function going on, right? Between the two, right? So you see there's two kinds of relationships. There's a functional relationship, and then there's a spatial relationship, right? That's clear, right? Now, the point is that while it is true that in order to have a functional relationship between two physical objects, there must be a spatial relationship also. Because the hand couldn't be related to the brain functionally unless there was some point of contact between the two. But since they're both in the world of the physical, the only way they could be related has to be through a physical thing, right?
Yes.
Okay. So in order to be related functionally, they have to be related
through physical.
That's related spatially.
Then has the soul, which is spiritual, right, relate with the body, which is physical?
Okay. All right. That's a good question. Then has the soul, which is spiritual, relate to the body, which is physical?
Certain means that I can understand.
1 second. Excuse me.
I can understand the certain means.
Okay. Now, things like this. That insofar as the relationship between the soul and body, the reason why, in order to have a functional relationship between two things, there has to be some special relationship, is because both of them are physical. You see? However, if one of them is not physical, like in the case of the soul, then by nature, its function does not depend on a physical contact. So therefore, it can be related to the function of something else, even though there is no physical contact. You know what I'm saying? That's
the
only spatial relationship. If you're dealing with the function of an entity which is by nature not spatial.
Not physical.
You see?
Yeah.
You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
So therefore now you're just dealing with the function of each entity. Do you know what I mean? You follow? I don't know if that's clear. What we're saying is that if two things are physical, the only way they could be related is through a physical medium. Even though they're related functionally, which is not spatially. The functional relationship can only be brought about through spatial interaction. You know what I mean? Spatial relationship, right? Now, if one of those entities, however, is not physical, right? So therefore, but nevertheless it has a function. We say the soul functions, right? So even though it's not physical, it still functions, right? Now, in order to relate an entity that's not physical, you see, to the function of an entity that's physical, it's not necessary to have a physical. You don't have to have a physical relationship. It's only, you know what I'm saying? Because by nature, the soul is not physical. It doesn't require a physical. It will be related functionally and not physically. So you're dealing with two physical.
The first person said, in order to be functionally, it has to be physical. And I'm saying it can be physically. It doesn't need physical to be functional.
First we're saying that what?
First we said that in order to be functional, it has to be physical. Two physical things.
Two physical things, but that's an accidental thing. In other words, I'm saying like this. The reason why two physical things, to be related functionally, have to be related physically, is an accidental thing. Really, the functional relationship is a separate relationship, the functional relationship. But in order to be related functionally, accidentally, by their nature, they have to be related physically. But if you're dealing with something whose nature is not physical, so it can be related functionally without being related physically. You know what I mean? To give you an example, this idea itself shows you how difficult it is for our minds to rise above the physical. You know what I mean? Because, see, once you go away from the physical already, you feel that loss. Like, you feel lost. You know what I mean?
You're not sure already.
That's because everything that we learn is through the senses. You know what I'm saying? Now, what we're saying is that in another existence, post-mortem existence, then you don't have that limitation anymore. They can actually go past that.
Physical's finished?
Yeah, physical's finished, see?
Is there any reason why when God created man, he created man, that he had to use all his physical senses in order to do anything? Like he didn't give him a sixth sense, which wouldn't be physical?
And why he did it that way?
Yeah.
Why did he create physical?
I will take that. I will take
could
that.
Could it be reason why...
Day of tomorrow?
Yeah. Could it be reason why it says that you can never see...
All right. Can I help you out a little bit?
No.
I didn't...
That's
the question.
How can we say that it's physical? Each person has one. It's not a physical thing. It's the soul. Is it physical?
Man separate souls?
No, how is it not physical? We're saying that each person has one.
What's the question? How do you separate them? Is that your question?
What are you saying? It's one soul?
No, I'm asking you. How do you have different souls? That's the question.
It's all one soul. You have...
That's another key to scapegoat. See? And the only reason they know that it exists is because they see light traveling towards it and just vanishing.
Is there really something?
Yeah. No one has observed a black hole. You can't observe one. This is impossible to see. There's no light escape. What?
Area space.
Area space. See light traveling through it. Sucked in. So the
gravity pulls light.
Yeah, gravity affects light too. That's why Einstein showed that. That's Einstein's light is nothing more than equals mc square. So light is nothing more than another form of matter. So therefore, gravity will affect light also. That's why that was Einstein's thing. He said that if you could see that the sun, if you see certain stars in the daytime, they would be a little bit moved because the gravitational pull of the sun would move pull of light. So that's when they had an eclipse. They were lucky. They had an eclipse right when they were debating this point. They were going to have an eclipse. So they set up the observatories in Edinburgh, England. And they had, they watched it exactly, because otherwise you can't see stars in the daytime, They watched it, and it was right. It's right, famous experiment. So, that's why... What? Yep, otherwise it would be a wrong argument. But, at any rate, so let's get back to this. And now the question was, what is the relationship between the soul and the body? We said it's a functional relationship. It's not a spatial relationship, right? Okay. Now, what is the functional relationship? What is a functional relationship? Alright, let's describe it first, okay? The description of functional relationship is this, that the soul only works upon the material fed to it by the body. See? Like, for instance, like we mentioned before, like you see two things, you see two shtenders over there, so they look pretty much the same. So your mind thinks of the idea of equality, right? You see five things, you think of numerical ideas, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right? Those things you can never see number. You can never see equality. You can never see basic logical principles. They're all in the mind, see? Now the point is that when you see physical things, it reminds you of these ideas. You see? Now the ideas are really from the soul. But the soul cannot function unless somehow it is stimulated through the physical reality. See, in this existence, that's what the Torah maintains, Kloirani ha'odam v'choy. Man cannot see me while I am alive. A person cannot understand God while he's alive. Why? Even Moshe Rabbeinu. Because of the fact that even Moshe Rabbeinu, whose mind is so abstract, but the abstract mind only works, has to be stimulated by the physical. Because that's the relationship between the soul and the body in this world. The soul and the body is related in such a way that the only way the soul can function is through the medium of the body, through the body stimulating it through the physical things that it sees, you see? So that's the relationship, that's the tie between the two. See? But the amazing thing, the most amazing thing, this is something which I mentioned a number of times, that you see that the fact remains that how do we understand the world, how do we understand the universe? Only through ideas, right? So, there are two possibilities. Either our ideas are in our heads, and they're just crazy things, just things that we use in order to sum things up, or else we're perceiving a real reality with our ideas, a different kind of reality, which is at the basis of the other reality. We know it's the basis because that's the reality you have to work with in order to make anything, in order to do anything, you see? Now, if you're going to say possibility A, which is that it's just something that we use, then it's very funny indeed. How come all of reality conforms to this? In other words, if I have a way of summing up things in my mind, why is it that all of reality does conform to this? That was the argument between Einstein and Mach. So Mach maintained that the mind just takes five phenomena and gives a theory. But it's not, the theory isn't real, the theory doesn't exist. It's just the mind makes it up. It's something the mind makes up, right? So Einstein said, if that's the case, how come if I make up a theory for five things, how come it'll work on the sixth one? The sixth one doesn't have to obey my crazy idea. So it must be something more than that. If it's just summing up, I should only include those things that I summed up, right? But it shouldn't include the next five things that come along. See, and Einstein's theory is world famous for that, for the fact that he gave a theory, and the more facts that keep coming in, keep conforming to that theory. So that's why he used his, matter of fact, he went over to Mach after that experiment I just mentioned to you. He said, if you're going to tell me that reasoning isn't real, the reasoning is just a human phenomenon which you goes on in the head, but it doesn't really have any actual value in reality, then how come the things that I worked out, I only worked out a certain amount of things, but new things keep coming in, and they keep fitting into this theory, you know? It would seem that what I've done is really tapped on something that's out there. It's real. Even though it's not physical, it's just an idea, but it's something real out there. And that's what Yadis holds. Yadis, without a doubt, holds like Einstein's it's Pesukim in the Torah. Chukos Shemayim V'aretz, the laws of heaven and earth, you know, Pesukos in the Nevi'im. Pesukim in the Nevi'im. That there is a reality, the real reality of the laws upon which the whole universe turned. And those are the real ideas. That's the soul can perceive. See, but you need the body in this world. You must have the imagination. What I call the imagination is the ability to picture in your mind what's going on, the physical properties. Then you can work with the ideas. But this reality is not just something which is made up. It's something which really exists. And when we say that the soul exists after death, we say it's that reality that the soul perceives, that non-physical thing. You see, which we perceive in this world, but has to function through the body. But in the next world, it's only the abstract. You see? But that part, we say, does not die with man's physical death. Because it doesn't have a physical property. See? An idea doesn't have a physical property. It's equality. Can you touch equality? Can you feel it? There's no way, but it's an idea that exists. An idea that has a base in reality. So now this basis, this idea is what the soul perceives, and this is what goes on after death. See? So even though the body dies, this thing does not. Death is an alien thing to it. You know what I mean? It's not a physical entity. But those ideas are the reality. We maintain, like Einstein maintained, that there is a reality beneath the physical reality. That's the real world, because that's the source of everything. And that person doesn't go loose. Okay. And you know, some of the greatest minds in the world people think that the world to come is it's totally a mystical thing. It's true that the Indians believe in happy hunting grounds, you know, but it's not the same kind of thing that Yadis maintains, you know. Like, I'll give you an example. There's certain things that, so a lot of sociologists will say, well, you know, the world to come, it's a sociological phenomenon. The Egyptians believed in it, and primitive tribes believe in it. All religions accept it, it's the same thing. Not necessarily the same thing. Just because you have primitive people accepting something, it's not the same thing. Primitive man believes in God too. But Einstein believes in God too. They're two different gods, and it's two different things. You know what I mean? The only thing that's in common is the name. But the type of thing is totally different. You know what I'm saying?
It's still a common factor that through...
Because the primitive man wants to believe in the father figure. So he needs the protection of the father figure. Einstein didn't need protection. He was living in a scientific, technological society. He believed in God because he could see that there has to be something behind this fantastic order of the universe. You know what I mean? That's why it's a different type of thing. It's a different thing altogether. The only thing, like I say, the only thing we have in common is the term God, because it happens to be a being that is, but to the savage, it's just a supernatural being. To Einstein, it's not a supernatural being. So it's a very natural being that's behind all of nature. Like I say, the only thing they have in common is the name. That's why, like in the Torah, you have the Torah is so much against Avodah Zarah. The worst thing in the Torah is Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah is the primitive Avodah Zarah certainly is nothing more than it's completely, it has no shackles. The Evanesis is atheism. Atheism is Avodah Zarah, same thing. But getting back to this point, and so far, like, for instance, primitive tribes believed contagious diseases. That through communication, you know, people can transmit the disease. They believed in it, right? truth of the main science is also accepted, but not the same way as primitive man. Primitive man thought of some type of spirit going around there. You know what I mean? Scientists know that it works with bacteria. There is actually bacteria go from one person to another, and that's how they become infected. So you say that, well, primitive man believed in it, so therefore it's not true. No, they, of course they believed in it. They believed in contamination through association, but it's a different kind of thing than what the modern man believes. You know what I mean? I mean, a scientist doesn't believe in this, and just because he believes that some things are contagious doesn't mean it's the same idea as a primitive man believes in contagious also. Different kind of contagious. Primitive man thinks there's spores flying around. Scientists know that there are bacteria go from one person to another. You know what I mean? So just because the thing is found in common between primitive man and between modern man, the term is in common, but the idea is totally different. Our idea of God is completely different than the primitive tribes. It has no shachas. I mean, one is just a projected father or supernatural figure, and the other one is understanding the, based upon understanding and knowledge of nature. The question is, how do we know, why should we derogate their opinion? And why should we say their opinion is wrong, right? What would you say insofar as science is concerned? You say, do you accept the idea of contagion?
Transferring.
Right.
Yeah, well, they have proof.
I used to look after, try to get the oil of the poppy seeds, or sesame oil. Omar, he said, Hi, Moshe Snyder effect. He said that this one draws the oil better, so that's why he went after the sesame seed oil. Even the Shamal of other Rabbi Yeshua Ben Levi, then when he heard what Rabbi Shimon Levi said, so he took olive oil. Why? Oh my, I saw him the higher right thing. Because it's brighter. It's a brighter plant, you see. So the Gemara says that first, right, because once I'm Rabbi Shimon Levi, So Abaye says first he used to go after what? He used to try to get sesame oil, right? Then he went for olive oil. Why? Because olive oil is brighter. So you see that there's no reason to take olive oil because it was both on ace. Otherwise, why didn't he try to get sesame oil? And the only reason to switch to olive oil was because olive oil is a brighter flame.
You're talking about Hanukkah?
So you see that there's no meaning of using olive oil because it was both on ace. That was the reason. So he used to go both on ace. So then he should have gone so far, he should have gone to use olive oil.
Right, he shouldn't even bother with
it. Yeah, he shouldn't even bother with sesame oil. So why did he bother with sesame oil? Because...
Try to get the best form.
That's the idea.
Right.
I want us to get the best form.
Right.
So that's why one of the Rishonim, Rebbe Lezmin Mitz, says that in our day, candles are the best. Because candles give the best form, better than olive oil, and they burn better, it's brighter, everything. And before, I'll tell you this, that the way they use the olive oil with the wicks, it definitely is very good.
Half of them go out, and then they get big.
Butter, and they don't burn evenly. So definitely, I'll be din. You should definitely, like the Gemara said, if sesame seed oil was brighter, you would have used sesame. So if you have a better flame, it gives the flame. You should have a good flame. That's why definitely you shouldn't follow that sheet at all. That the, you use olive oil plus bosonase. Because there's no meaning like that. The Gemara isn't helping that.
Because it seems like just the absolute Mr. Brewer, you know?
This is the Ramesha Holstrom and the Ramesha and the Rock both again.
That you should use candles?
They should, they, that there's no need of using all of our both of
them.
Really? Yeah, it is. Because you should light it by Shkir.
Right. And Shkir, right?
About, well, according to the Rambam and many, you light it by Shkir. That's when I tried to light, right?
Right.
The reason it's supposed to burn the Shabbos candle is because it should burn as long as it takes for rush hour of the oven during the entire duration of rush hour, and that's approximately, I would say, at least 3 hours, two hours at least, 4 to 6. And I know you don't light it 4, because it's 4 Shkia, light it at 4:30. So 4:30 till, say, 6:30, 2 hours, you know what I mean? So if you have oil, a little bit of oil will last that long. But these little candles don't last long at all. So it's enough to, hash
it.
Rush hour?
Tomorrow,
let's give them an hour.
In
Shabbos, that's what's given on the Rav. Is the Gemara saw it over here. Omar Abayit. First is Omar Rishiv and Levi Koshman and Kun Yafman never Shemin Zayas Min Amokha. That's what it says. And then it says, Omar Abayim, a Reish Hafa Ma'ad Amar, Mish Chodesh Shoshim.
They get the first part, not Shemin Zayas Min Amokha.
They missed the, they missed the analysis.
So they would think Shemin Zayas Min Amokha because at that point that was the best thing to learn.
Correct. Because I must prepare to say, so first, use sesame seed oil because it burns better. So you see, you didn't care about the effect of those things. So Abaya, I mean, Abaya is very religious man. So he was definitely the better thing. Then the Gemara says, the Gemara says, this analysis. Then the Gemara is saying, after I heard Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, then I switched to olive oil. Because he said, why is it best? What did Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi say is best? Because it burns brightest. Because it's brightest. It is true. You gotta notice it. If you look at the flame of olive oil, it's a brightness to it. A
bright yellow?
Yeah, a lighter yellow. If you ever take a look at it, it's like a brighter color.
Yeah.
And so that's why, so that's more heat or mist for that, that type of flame. See?
So it's not the olive oil itself, it's just the fact the olive oil burns better.
Exactly. There's nothing to do with it.
So if the candle burns better, then it's a candle.
Exactly. The rubbish candles. The Rashi is solo umeir. It's clearer and gives more light.
So Shabbos candle gives more light.
Shabbos candle. Yeah, the candles are the best. I don't think anyone, unless the guy's a real pro. I mean, I don't think people could make a flame with a wicking oil that's going to burn as good as a Shabbos candle. I really don't believe it. Right?
See, Shabbos candles about 99.9% of the time burn all the way down.
That's right.
They'll make it.
Well, half of them will make it. Yeah, it's
good to freeze them, too. And the ones that do, sputtering and,
freezing them also helps. You know, when you freeze shabbos candles, they last longer.
Is that so?
Yeah.
That really works.
Yeah.
At least our
hotel candles. Really? It really does. In the refrigerator, if it's freezing.
At least our hotel refrigerator. I don't know why. What did they say?
Put them in the freezer. It's longer time. I don't
understand. There was another question. You had a question, right?
Yeah, but the question was, I don't accept the Navi because he gives signs and,
Right.
Then how can, then what Mashiach, how is supposed to know when the Mashiach?
Ah, very good question. Okay. All right. Let's see, you're thinking of this. Okay, question was raised, you don't accept the Navi because he gives signs, right? And how do you know Mashiach when it comes, right? The answer is you can tell by the sign.
That's
what? I should have got that.
That was a big star branded on the donkey.
Then he can't tell by his donkey, but there'll be a lot of donkeys that think that they Now, the truth of the matter is that the Rambam says, the Rambam explains how you own the ship is. And it's a very simple point. And he'll close Malachim. If you have a Rambam, let's say that. That's Mashiach, and the other one is that if you do it, it's Mashiach. Now, all these things depend upon certain requirements. So, well, first of all, he has to be the person himself, has to be an individual. So, I mean, Shemitah Mitzvah does that thing, more than that, though. He has to be a Chacham Gadol. It says Chacham Gadol Yeh Yosef Mishnah, right? He has to be a tremendous Chacham. And he has to be a Navi. A Navi also. Karav HaMashe Rabbeinu. That's what Rambam says. Okay? That's the requirement of the individual. Of course, he has to be an individual that's plagued with Torah. It's a tremendous Torah, you know, works in Torah. And tremendous Lama, tremendous Lama Chacham. So he doesn't have to be a Gavah Zohar. But he has to be a tremendous Lama Chacham. Because Rambam says, like, Dabar HaMelech. Dabar wasn't necessarily the biggest Lama Chacham in the Zohar. Gemara said that Kibosheth is the bigger than him. Doesn't mean he's the biggest Talmud Chacham in the door. It has to be a very big Talmud Chacham. A very big Talmud Chacham. So, by the way, they said everyone knows it's two Mashiachim, right? Two Mashiachim, they will be, right? Rambam, two, yeah. The whole thing about Mashiachim, and Yosef Mashiachim, David. The Rambam says the two Mashiachim are one we had already, one Mashiach we had already. That was David and Olaf. It was the first Mashiach. Because he was the one that what did he do to Mashiach? He was the one that organized Klal Yisrael and created the situation where we had sovereign power, And then basically he was the one that caused the Beit HaMikdash to go. Because he's, we had our Tzrah and we had everything that we needed. You see? So he was the first Mashiach. That's why I say, Ali Day Dovid, Mashiach the Chach. The first Mashiach.
We already had one.
There will be another one though. And the other one, this is the way you could, this is the way you could tell. See? Alright? Now. If there will arise a Melech from Beis David who learns Torah and does mitzvahs like David HaMelech, it says, Kefi Torah should exav v'shev al tef, he follows the Halacha of Torah should exav v'shev al tef, v'yachal kol Yisrael le'elatva, u'lechazek v'dosa, and it will coerce, or I should say influence all of the Jews to follow the Torah and to embrace the das of Yadis. And then he says, the Elohim Elohim Os Hashem. He does those, in other words, we know who the person is, we know what he does. He causes Father Israel to learn Torah, right, and do mitzvahs. And then the Elohim Elohim Os Hashem, he goes towards the fight to battle with God. Hare that the Ches Kashim Mashiach. We assume he's Mashiach. We have to assume he's Mashiach. If he reaches that stage. See? Now, in also that if he, in other words, at the time when he waged war, he did the first requirement, which is to cause all of Israel to follow the ways of God, right? Then he decides to wage wars in order to free the Jews from their oppression, right?
Even if he doesn't win the wars, he just
one second. The moment he decides to wage wars, you have to go with him, because you have to assume he's Mashiach. That's all. You can assume Mashiach.
But he's got to have all. He's got to have all those attributes. Right?
That's right. He has to be a person, Tamil Chacham, and Mitzvahs. And he causes the Jews to follow the true doctrines. Now, in also the Tliyah, if he was successful, Ubon and Migdash in Tamil, and he built the Migdash in its right place, the key base is Israel, and he gathered all the Windows of Israel from all over the world, he gathered them together, Harech and Mashiach Bavale, then he's definitely Mashiach. Okay? That's the way you know. That's the way you know. But the round before, it says openly, in Alacha Gimel, Al Yal Al Dai Kashem, Melech Mashiach, Torah Klachas, Osus, and Osus. Do not think that the Melech Mashiach has to do wonders and miracles. Mechadesh Vorm Ba'olam has to create new things in the world, new events, you know what I mean? Supernatural phenomena. Al Mechaya Nation, of course, the dead shall become alive. He cares to learn how. Ain't other car. That's not the case.
Mashiach is actually taking.
Sherei Rekiva, Fachim Dolan, and Chachmei Mishnah. Because Rekiva was the tremendous Fachim and Chachmei Mishnah. Alright? Zikat Varam Kochanim, Shatara Zitzikar, Shatava Oilam, Oilam, Elamim, they must be from the name of the garden man. The Torah will not change, there will be no changes in the Torah. The reason why Imam mentions things, why Imam mentions the thing. But the, you see the mistake, that's the mistake that the nature made. The Christians made with the Yeshu, Jesus. Because he claimed to do miracles, Machiah Mason, you know what I mean? And he claimed to do certain feats, you know what I mean? So certain supernatural phenomena, certain supernatural feats. That has nothing to do with Mashiach. That's an infantile idea of Mashiach. You know what I'm saying? It's an infantile idea of Mashiach. The idea of Mashiach has nothing to do with miracles. That's why none of the Jews, you see, Jesus in his time, it's true, had followers. He had like 30 followers, whatever it was. But none of the Jews took him seriously. Because they knew that that's not the form of Mashiach. I mean, the man wasn't Tamil Chacham. You know what I'm saying? He wasn't Tamil Chacham. He wasn't Hagi the Terror. He went around with his own nonsense. You know what I mean? And this was, he had to, so that's why they knew that he wasn't Mashiach. The only ones that took him seriously were the Christians hundreds of years later. But in his day, the Jews knew that he was nothing. He was going to give nothing. There was a lot of people that used to walk around saying the Mashiach. And you had a lot of people in those days walk around saying the Mashiach. And the Sanhedrin, but then nobody was taking seriously. The only thing is that he became famous because of Paul. But he was the only one that Paul was the one that popularized. Changed the system over, took out the mitzvahs, the office things, and so it just so happened that the world was looking for somebody at that time. And he was the one that they picked on, and they had something. You know what I mean? But he didn't fulfill any of the requirements of the Mashiach. As we know from the story, nothing. Not as a person, not that he accomplished anything, nor did he bring any of the things that the terrorists is openly Mashiach will bring, like peace of the world. Nothing. The world was simply than before. Yes.
How will Mashiach know that he's supposed to go ahead and do all these things? He has to read, he's going to read Talmud Chacham, he said. So he didn't know from what he read, but he just heard this now. Is this what he has to do? Or is Hashem going to tell him that he is supposed to know how to do these things?
He knows what he has to do.
He
doesn't
do it, right?
Well, the Rambam says, another question, Rambam says, Nadi Gadi Yeh. The last Rambam is the Rambam, and all set. It's not hard to find. It's next to the last parish, you see. Now let's see, says,
there's a lot of war though, isn't there?
What?
I mean,
It would seem like there'd be a lot of war starting up.
Come on, I mean.
Yeah. Let's say Moshiach came and all the Jews started becoming religious or anything.
There'd
be a lot
more
of
that.
You know?
A lot of your
problems. Yeah. That's what. Yeah.
It'd be even more of a tax to do it, I mean.
It wouldn't be a war if they went back to Israel. You have to have a good knowledge of psychology. That's very important. Good knowledge of that is very important.
What?
Can't underestimate it. What?
It is very important.
Very important. A good sound knowledge of psychology. Very important. So that you know yourself insofar as you can. See? And then a constant awareness. Once you have those two things, you'll become aware of the conflicts that are going on with yourself. And be able to be covered the age.
Then you can work on what you're aware of.
You can work on it. Not to give in to an inclination which you know the activity is really not going to result in a beneficial thing, but it's just going to result in more involvement in that area. You know what I mean? And every person has his own thing. This person I want to show off, another person I want to hide, I don't know, whatever, you know, different emotions that people have, you see? But a person must recognize his emotions, and he must be willing to uproot them. Greed, and horizontality, kimon. I mean, there's different types of different things.
They can destroy you.
A person must notice these things, and he must recognize that to follow these things is a death sentence to the soul. Because to follow these things means that he's just going to be drawn into a vacuum where he's going to be drawn in more and more. The force increases as he draws, as he gets drawn in. And he lacks control, and he's completely lost. Okay? But the person has to stop it as soon as possible. On the contrary, the enjoyment that a person has from realization that he's pulled himself out from these base emotions is so great. On the contrary, of course, the time is very little. But once he, when he does, when they do succumb, you know, and then he really is successful, it's tremendous freedom. Person, you don't realize the person is a ball type. I have no freedom. So the other day, I was at somebody's house, they're showing me around the house. Very wealthy, expensive house. Cost $300,000 now, really. They were showing me this detail and that detail and this. I was looking at them, I thought to myself, I really feel sorry for these people. Steep like slaves. What difference does it make if the guy, how much work went in there to make this cabinet and that cabinet and this little nick and that little nick? I mean, it's really silly when you think about it. You know what I mean? Guy has a table that can place his body in this position over here next to a specific board, which is very smooth, which is placed in a certain position. There is no crack between the board and the wall. I mean, it's silly. You really want them to do this for? No necessity for it. The person is involving, in terms of the universe, what's different than the way it's silly. The person is involving himself out of his effort to work for the money in order to be able to, the effort necessary to work for the money in order to be able to achieve this. And the person, that's nothing yet. It's just the beginning. The involvement. Who I want to think about smooth boards and boards of cracks in them and where they're placed. I mean, there's so many important things to think about. Think about a cabinet against the wall. I mean, that's an important thing for a person to think about in this world. It's fiction. Unfortunately, they have nothing else. So they're drawn into this thing and become slaves to these activities. They want that legitimacy that the guy get out of it. Well, he enjoyed showing me around, you know? My gosh, why isn't it worth that late? Sit there and look at those cabinets, you just sit there for 3 hours. And silly. First, thank God, first in the mind, you can sit and open the Gemara and work on a score and think about an idea, have a discussion, even if it's about Tolo. I'd rather be involved in about Tolo than involved in that nonsense. Because about Tolo, if you're speaking with the guys in the yeshiva, guys on head, Joe, Chachma, something, you know what I mean? It's not Stam about Tolo. It's also a level. Yeah, it's a level, you know what I mean? So, thank you. Pictures.
But it takes time to work on it. I mean, it won't just come like that, will it?
No, it won't just come like that. It takes time to work on it. You have to be able to...
You've got to keep on being aware of it.
You want to do it.
Well, you see, it's like the Rambam says an important thing. Kovesh is Yitro, and Rambam says, Kovesh Bedaito is Yitro. It puts in one word. Why Bedaito? Because just to suppress your emotions will never work. Never work to suppress your emotions. You can't do it. If you suppress your emotions and you don't give vent to your feelings, first of all, you should never prevent an emotion.
emotion from coming to the mind. That's the same.
What do you mean by that?
No, like a person should never, let the person senses that this, that he, let the person has fiber or something. So sense that he has a fiber, right? So he might, like, prevent it from himself from even realizing that he has that fiber. That's wrong.
You have to look at it, analyze it, and say, do you need it? You don't need it.
The fiber should be able to register in the mind. Focus.
And then work on it once it's
and
there.
And then, once it's there, and he sees it clearly, then he should be able to say, well, actively, well, let me see now, right? And may I just desire for this thing, right? The question is, what benefits will accrue me if I do this? Well, what benefits will accrue me on the contrary if I would involve myself in thought, you know, and do this? Now, he has to deal with it rationally, in a rational way. Not in an irrational way to suppress it, because that doesn't work. Suppression doesn't work. Suppression is a dangerous thing psychologically. You know what I mean? Just to express these things. You can't. The person must have full realization of what witness has. But then he must handle it in a way. Chazal was very, very, very much aware of that. That a person must have a realization of the, and not suppression. That's why Chazal said a person is sadistic. A person is vicious. Sadistic. He should become a shaker. See? Because they recognize. And you recognize also that certain emotions you can't possibly handle all your emotions rationally. A certain person has to have some expression to you know, give vent to a degree, otherwise you can't live. I mean, a person can't, a person has to eat, he has to sleep, he has to have needs, his wants. I mean, you have to have a certain amount, he has to get married, he has to have these things. But see, otherwise he can't live.
So but a lot of the time, of course, like jealousy and all that stuff.
Yeah, see, that's the point. Those things, those the times that are the needs, you know what I mean? As far as like, I think Ram writes to his son. He says, he writes an interesting thing. He says, the idea was that a person should not, and see, most people in life are looking for temptation. They're advancing themselves towards temptation. You see? Like they're looking, what's the next thing I can get? So they're out there looking for temptation to get to them. So Ram says, I think it was a son of the Ram, and said, it should be the opposite way. That let the temptation find you. Do you know what I mean? Like, in other words, you shouldn't be out there looking for the next taiva. But of course, if a taiva attacks a guy, it has to be a certain amount, unless he's a really very high level, as far as he's a human being, there's a certain amount of satisfaction he has to, you know, otherwise he can't begin with. But the point is, but beyond that point, I mean, he has to control his time. He has to control it. He has to exercise control. If there is no, if he doesn't exercise control, if he doesn't feel the painful withdrawal, then he can't possibly ever reach any height. I mean, it has to be a painful thing, though.
Oh, so it's definitely a painful thing.
Oh, yeah, it has to be.
Yeah, but it can be enjoyable, too, if you can see why you're doing it. It doesn't hurt, but you see,
that's right.
if you look backwards at it,
that's
it's painful.
Right.
If you look forward, it's not at all.
Well, the point is, at certain times, it's painful. In other words, at the time when the emotion takes hold of you...
You first break it home, maybe.
It's a hot, that's right. It's a hot thing. But later, after that painful thing, the realization, of course, is very enjoyable. And a person feels that he's free from all these types. It's tremendous freedom. You know, these were bogged down with this, that. You don't need these things. The freedom, on the contrary. There's certain enjoyment in the freedom. You know what I mean? Like an enjoyment, like a backpacker's enjoyment. What's a backpacker's enjoyment? He has everything he needs on his back. You know, he's out in the woods and he's got everything he needs. You know what I mean? That's a type of mushroom, a type of enjoyment. See? The man realizes he travels light through this world. No heavy baggage. He's free. He's free. His energies are free. So he really enjoys superior things than being bogged down with these materialistic.
Yeah, but like how about not only materialistic, but how about like Ben Adamal Haver, you know, like if he's, you know, jealous of the person or this or that. I mean, you got to work on. Those can also.
Yeah, anyway, if you can't work on, in terms of the jealousy, you can't work on, you can work intellectually on removing the jealousy, but you mustn't suppress the jealousy. The emotion of jealousy can't suppress. What he should do is not allow the jealousy to cause him to do any action. You know what I mean? If he senses, he realizes, he feels himself in jealousy, he shouldn't feel guilty about feeling jealous. That's bad. Because it's a natural emotion. You know, he shouldn't feel guilty about feeling that jealousy. Because if he does, then he's just going to fool himself into thinking he's not jealous when he is jealous. You know what I mean? That he can't do. But what he should do is, he should have full realization that he has that emotion of jealousy. You know what I mean? And he should try to understand rationally why jealousy is really nonsensical. Like he was saying, each person has his own reality, and if you need to compare, say that God has to make everybody equal is nonsensical. You know what I mean? So therefore, you should realize that it doesn't make any sense. That's one. And secondly, insofar as the emotion takes hold, the emotion of jealousy takes hold of him. You know what I mean? He must, insofar as the emotion of jealousy takes hold of him, he must not allow it to cause him to act. You see? That's where he will find that when the emotion causes him to act and he controls it, that's when he will find that he will start breaking away.
This is what psychology can do when you can analyze it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Psychology gives you an analytic mind.
I don't think that at all.
I got it.
You got it.
I got it.
Might as well both of them. Same boat. There's a psychology can be analytic.
Say study logic, some pretty much. But if you want to have an awareness and knowledge of yourself, then you should study psychology. And you should understand the basics of psychology should be understood. No question about it. It's very important. Very important study. Very important.
So when you get into your self form.
Are you studying it at all?
I'm doing. I guess it's time to try to break away.
Psychology. Really more scientific.
You
said
it's one of the old times yourself.
More detail.
That's what I do. I don't like that. I just look at what I need to do.
I would suggest.
No. You better just look inside yourself and see what.
No, no, no.
If
you
want to look better,
you don't have the knowledge of it, then.